And today we're going to talk about Christmas.
No, we're not.
Yes, we are, because every time we get on stage, we're giving the audience the gift of ourselves. That's why they call it stage presence.
Where did I go wrong? Oh, God. Oh. So we're going to talk about not P-R-E-S-E-N-T-S, P-R-E-S-C-E-N-C-E.
Same presence. Thing. The gift of yourself. But, okay, we've talked a lot in these conversations about the learning process, things like that. There's an essential element of our craft that isn't fading. It's gone. I mean, there's a few of us left. But the all-around performer in old-time banjo, really, Grandpa Jones was the last one in pop culture that could get on stage with nothing but a banjo, stomp on the stage, and tell a story. It wasn't, sure, he was wearing a costume, but he'd been wearing that costume since the 50s.
Yeah, yeah. String Bean was another one.
Yep, taken from us much too soon.
They were musicians and entertainers, performers.
And there's something really fascinating about folk music and the banjo. When people take up the banjo, they have personal preferences and tastes. After their fifth or sixth week of owning the banjo, they abandon their personality and start dressing, talking, and speaking the same meaningless gobbledygook as everybody else in their peer group they're trying to fit into. We saw it happen with bluegrass.
Yep.
They dressed a certain way. There was a festival we went to. It might have been the one on the way to Michigan, but we stopped at a festival and we left really quick because the bands were only allowed to play on stage if they were playing specific Gibson instruments relating to what the Bill Monroe Bluegrass Boys played through the years.
Yeah, I kind of blocked that out of my memory.
It was one of those, we looked at each other and just beat feet because it was like Children of the Corn. And we saw it happen at Gettysburg. We saw it happen at the old-time music festival in Delaware.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
My God, that one was the craziest because there was a period, and people deny this happened, but we were there. We saw it happen on stage. If there's a scratch on the record we're copying, we're going to put the scratch right in our show. And we're in the audience. We're milling around the crowd. And there's this old-time band on stage. I won't say the name. And he's doing the old Irish Police song. I'm Irish police. I'm walking the beat, working the Broadway patrol. Don't I look grand with my club in my hand? I'm working the Broadway patrol. It was not an old-time string band song. It was a vaudeville number, yep, about an Irish cop having a ball because he's got a license to walk around.
Cracking heads with his baton.
So yeah, you've got a song that's timely for any generation. And in the middle of it, because their record had a scratch in it, they all together, rut, rut, and went back into the song. And we're looking at each other like, and people in the audience were going, wow. And we're looking at each other going, but, and the crazy thing was, a year later, it was gone.
Yeah.
This would have been like 92, 93. Right before we went on radio.
Yeah.
And everywhere we've gone over the years, there's always this transformation where people, they have specific likes, personalities, ideas. And when they take up the banjo, I only listen to old-time fiddle tunes. I'm sorry, nobody only listens to old-time fiddle tunes.
And nobody picks up the banjo
to play old-time fiddle tunes. So even before we get into the part of stage presence, number one, there's no such thing as talent. When you see somebody performing on stage well, they did not grow up knowing how to do that. If they started as a child, they were probably beaten. Or like, what's her name that sang Over the Rainbow? They kept her on methamphetamine and sleeping pills. Judy Garland. Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney, they kept them on methamphetamine and sleeping pills through the whole teenage years, because they would work 12-hour shifts on stage. And people, oh, she's such a natural actor. She doesn't know where she is. So you see people who, like the kid act that grows up, there's probably a lot of stuff backstage you don't know. And the seasoned performer who's on stage is comfortable on stage. Trust me, their first time on stage was painful.
Oh, yeah, it's scary.
Nobody just knows how to perform. You have to be yourself, and you have to acquire skills to communicate on stage.
And you have to be so comfortable with your skill and your place in the craft, in your chops, if you will, that that doesn't enter into your thought process. You're just doing your job.
Right. And it's something that you learn. I don't know if it can be taught. This is one of the things where the current methodology of picking up the banjo and sitting in a circle and playing a memorized repertoire is doing irreparable damage to the craft, because the way I learned stagecraft was on boardwalks.
We did it.
Loading docks, but not just performing, interacting with musicians on the street.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
There was a guy, Lenny Ross, when I was working at the Harbor League building.
I remember Lenny. He was the last of the vaudevillians.
Oh, my God. He was a true song and dance burlesque comedian. And I would actually go to work early to have coffee and donuts with Lenny and just get more out of him.
Did he work for Hudson?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Not, but he wasn't very happy. ST wasn't very happy after what Lenny did. See, my grandfather had his 90th birthday party. And Lenny Ross, in his teachings to me over coffee and donuts, son, never go blue. Whatever you do, don't go blue. Because when you're doing shows like I do, you got girls and they got their groceries out and they got their feathers and they're twirling. You want the boys looking at the groceries, thinking about the groceries, but you don't want to make them crazy. So you don't go blue. Let them look. Maybe sing a little Thank Heaven for Little Goyles. And he taught me how to do that song and dance. We used brooms and hard hats for our, one of the secretaries came down looking for us, and we took her by the hand and walked her down the stairs. Look at her, boy. Isn't she healthy? But it was, that sort of burlesque is totally harmless. Everybody's in on the joke. So Lenny shows up to do the introductions at my grandfather's birthday party with the entire family, Irish Catholic, Pennsylvania Dutch Catholic family gathered. And Lenny gives the most raunchy, I can't share the jokes, but it didn't involve throwing a bedsheet over one of our larger cousins' butts and showing stag films. It kind of went, woo, down. You got a great pair of legs on you, Groffy, to my grandfather. You know, if you had feathers, you could pass for a parakeet. But I interacted with people at bus stations. I would meet people that see the banjo case and we'd talk. And I never approached it from, I only play this kind of music. It was always, oh, what do you play? I play music. And one of the crazy things that really, I think, confuses people when they take up old-time banjo, they think that there's like a certain playlist and a uniform.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Nobody who worries about that stuff in the audience or backstage is going to help you, support you, be your friend, or give you good advice.
They have nothing to give.
Exactly. It's Halloween. And I'm not taking shots at anybody. Believe me, I could. But you can't go on stage and fake it.
No.
You have to be yourself, and to do that you have to have the experience to lean across over your guitar when a heckler is giving you a hard time. Oh yeah, I remember my first beer too. Way to go, Captain. Bet your mom's proud. And you go back into the song, because we've already had guys in the crowd get naked. It doesn't faze us anymore.
Yeah, with the mummers.
Well, we're playing with the mummers and this guy runs up to the stage. I love you guys. You're the greatest. I'm like, oh, cool. We got a fan. It's my first time playing at the Mummers Museum. It's really exciting. You're a big crowd. We're playing. And I see the shirt fly up on the stage. Huh. And then a pair of pants.
Huh.
No. Oh, no. And then He's disco dancing. He's got his groceries out, and he's disco dancing. And I love you guys. You're the best band in the world. Number one. When the cops are taken away, he was hanging out the back of the police cruiser. I love you guys. You're the greatest. So I said to the guy who directs the Mummers Museum after the show, at least he was into it. And the guy at the Mummers Museum says, this guy's here every week.
He's part of the show.
He does this all the time. But those experiences, and if you go on stage trying to present yourself in the cookie cutter image of the old time banjo player
playing memorized tunes, between songs,
you're going to play songs nobody wants to hear.
Trying to impress people with your knowledge of the history of the banjo,
which nobody
cares.
There was actually a good piece of advice on the banjo hangout. A few weeks ago. It blew my mind that somebody said it. I actually clapped. Somebody pointed out that when you take the guitar up or when you go to perform with a guitar, there's no history lessons involved. It's just a guitar. There's a great history to the banjo, and you can draw on that.
If you're interested in it.
But you're not going to go door to door and tell people the good news about the five-string banjo. And if you do, they're going to catch you with a butterfly net.
Yeah, you're not an Amway salesman.
Have you heard the good news about the banjo? The banjo has a plan for you. Go on bicycles and little suits and ties. If you did that, people would think there's something off. And here's the thing. We do this all the time on stage. Even YouTube is full of people fitting into the cookie cutter rather than sharing of themselves.
Well, do you know why they do that? Of course, now you have to remember, I'm the world's greatest expert on my own opinion. But the reason that they dress like everyone else, stare like everyone else, try to memorize notes like everyone else is because that's all they have.
Right.
There's no chops. They can't interact with an audience. And girls and boys, whether you're on a stage, at a festival, a grade school, a high school, wherever you're playing, if you can't interact with the audience, you're finished. When you're on YouTube, I've watched thousands of you. You don't know how to interact.
No.
You're looking at the ground. You can see your eyes struggling to get the, not to forget the next memorized measure of music.
And that's going to happen with a student. But we're seeing this with professionals.
Yeah, yeah. I
didn't put the video up. I was good. I behaved. I got some lectures from you guys. But every day is Festivus for Patrick. So I'm not going to point to the very, very well-known professional that can barely get through Auld Lang Syne.
Yeah, that was bad.
The guy's eyes and mouth were rolling like somebody threw a wad of bubble gum into a cement mixer. The effort, and the thing is, it's the major scale.
It's not a conversation.
It's do, re, mi, fa, si, fa, sol, la, ti, do.
Yeah.
When you're performing with a musical instrument, and I could pick up a banjo and show off, but there again, I get the Everyday is Festivus lecture. So I want you to pick up your banjo. What's your favorite song? What song did your mother sing to you when you were a child or your parent? What song did you fall in love to? Have you first danced to?
But it's not old time.
No, but it's folk.
It's not Appalachian.
Okay, number one, the definition of old time, by and large, is fantasy.
Oh, yeah.
It was created to get grants.
Yeah.
And again, if you do the research, if you start reading, start with American Songbag, the first American folk song collection by one of America's better poets, Carl Sandburg.
And there's no music in it, just lyrics.
There's music. American Songbag has musical notation.
Oh, I was thinking of the other one.
But it also has the Midnight Special a long time before the Lomaxes visited Huddy Ledbetter. And when you start researching like that, and you see, wait a minute, these dates don't line up, and you start digging into the history of songs, you find crazy things, like Wonderful World. It drove me crazy. I see skies of blue. I fought with that song for years. And then somebody said, you know, it's Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. Change a few notes, but the chord progression stays the same. Wonderful world, all that lush chords, the harmonies, the strings, Satchmo. I see colors of the rainbow so pretty in the sky. It's Twinkle, Twinkle, twinkle Little Star. By approaching the song as something special,
you make it difficult.
Right, because perception. When I play a song, the audience may think I'm playing 100 different things. It might sound like I'm using different tunings, different techniques. It's always dead simple. I'm handicapped. How complicated could I have the system and be able to function with my hearing?
Yeah, yeah. It wouldn't work at all.
You have to approach it not from a reverential, oh, I'm worshiping this person. This artist is better than me. No, it's a human being with hands, a mind, baggage, just like everybody else. If that person did it, you can do it. But you have to approach it from a mechanical point of view. And you also have to develop a repertoire, not just on what you like. You want to start there. And you want to start by meeting people and singing along at campfires.
Sharing techniques, songs, ideas, visions.
And suddenly the songs you like matter less, and it's more about playing the songs that mean something to people.
Now, going back to the YouTube I think of what old Harmonica Joe told you. You got to interact. You got to relate to the crowd, to the people, to the individuals in the crowd. Got to make eye contact. You got to make them like you.
And there's one other element. On top of that, you've got to interact with these people. You've got to bring people into your life. And that was hard for me. I'm with my hearing and my introversion. I'm outgoing on stage. In private life, how secluded?
Stay the hell away from me.
If I could afford a cave to go live in.
I can be arranged.
I would love that. I would be so happy. A cave in a warm spot where I had plenty of tea.
I wonder if the cave that me, Tom, and Mickey, and I think Brian was there, visited up in, was near Harrisburg.
Is that the one with the bats?
Cold Cave.
Tell them that story.
And we all piled into one of our cars. I don't remember. It's so long ago. But Tom always carried a little 22 Colt Frontier Scout. And not on the street, but we were in the woods or whatever. And went into the cave, and he had his little gun, little single action, looked like a cowboy gun, little cut, you know, and was loaded with birdshot. And we went into the cave, and it was narrow, just enough room for one person.
I got to ask you three important questions.
Go ahead.
Okay, number one, a gun?
Well, it was the 60s.
Number two, a cave?
Yeah, it was a cave.
Number three, I know it was the 60s, but they were making horror movies before the 60s. You guys know that trips like this usually don't end well.
We were nuts.
Okay.
So there was a sign in the cave, no trespassing.
Well, it's better than fine for hunting. Oh, oops, there's sure to be bears here.
So Tom was in front, and I was behind him, and then Mickey and Brian, I think Brian was there. We're walking through the cave. We're spaced out a little bit. Only enough room to single file. It was like Thermopylae. And he stops dead, and he had a flashlight in one hand. I hear, holy shit, and he freezes, and I hear, bang, oh my God. So we all turn around, we start running. Well, Tom passed me in that hallway somehow, and that thing, he got out ahead of me. But that was an interesting...
Oh my God, I understand now. I understand how it happened. Chinese hooligans. They what? Probably snuck out of Shaolin Temple or something, and they were clowning around in a cave like you guys, being dumb teenagers, and then released the bats.
Well, the bats live there, you twit.
But I know that. That's why I don't go in the caves. I've been in two caves in my life. One was Crystal Cave, and that sucked. It smelled like pee, and all the Indian stuff was plastic. And the other was in Ireland, Alwi Caves. They filmed an episode of Father Ted there, the one where they get stuck in the cave and singing. Uh-huh. I've been in that cave. And let me tell you something. I got a lot of respect for miners, because there's a part of the cave where it starts out, we know this was a bear cave, because when we excavated the site, we found three bowls of porridge. So you know you're in Ireland, right? So you're thinking, oh, this is going to be a little tongue-in-cheek. And it goes deep.
And deeper. And darker.
You're going into the mountain. This is where the druids were going and cutting people up and singing about oak trees. Well, we get down there, and it's all well-lit. There's a path. And they say, well, you've never experienced true darkness in your life, so we're going to turn out the lights.
Click.
They count to 10. One of the guys on the tour went snakes to the point where I was reaching around in the dark, and if I got a handful of them, I was going to give them a nap. One prescription of a hard right. Just call me right there. This guy, he was I can't say I've never seen anything like it, because I couldn't even see the inside of my eyeballs. It was that dark. The darkness had texture. But when it went that dark, this guy...
freaked. Well, that's what... The dark didn't bother us. We had a flashlight. We all had a flashlight. But what the frightening thing was the flurry, the explosion of bats pouring out of this place.
Given the rabies thing, yeah.
He was trying to shoot them with the bird shot.
That's Uncle Tom.
But somehow that 6'5" string bean looking son of a gun passed me in that corridor. We had a good laugh all the way home. Oh, my God.
Now, the little banner we're doing here, we're sharing some anecdotes. When you do this on stage, it has to be the same way in that it has to be honest. You can't make up these stories.
No.
And we've seen people try. My absolute favorite, I was at a festival with friends. And a guy, again, a well-respected musician, not long after the How and Dow had come out, and people were trying to copy the way I was telling, using stories from my own life in my teaching. There'll be more on that, a little announcement at the end of this workshop. The guy gets on stage and starts telling this story about a coal miner from Michigan. Now, there's lots of mines in Michigan. It is mining country. Nickel, iron. I don't think it's that much of coal country. And the story, right away, coal mines of Michigan. You're thinking Zoolander with the coal mines of New Jersey. And then it goes into this thing. He only wanted to learn to play one song. And he weaves the story that the guy couldn't open his hands and all he wanted to do was play this one song that his grandmother. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, no. Uh-uh.
It lacks credulity.
It's not even that. Even if it happened, when you tell it in these hushed tones like this to make everything really serious, like let's say we take your uncle. So Uncle Tom was trying to shoot the bats, and somehow in the close claustrophobic confines of the cold cave, he passed me. He found space between the rocks to work through me like some liquid version of himself. You'd be in the audience going, screw you. But when you tell the story, he shot a gun off like an idiot and passed me in a narrow corridor. It gets the point across, and you're not doing the radio voice where you talk really seriously. All right, folks, I'm here to tell you lots of things about Rush Limbaugh. Make it really serious. There's plans. You hear preachers do it. You hear politicians do it. You hear talk radio hosts do it. And it only hits the dumbest people in the audience. Everybody else is going, no, no. It's one thing when the story's crazy enough.
Remember the one we saw at the in Pennsylvania where all the parking lot attendants were wearing?
Oh, God. We were at a festival. And this festival had been going on for a very long time. I think that by the time we went there, it had been going on for like 30 years. Well, a culture had developed within the people that went and didn't have anything to do. Their husbands or wives were playing musical instruments, so they would do things like manage the parking lot or organize the kitchen. And every one of them was wearing a medical appliance they didn't need, either knee braces, an oxygen thing, but smoking cigarettes and not wearing the oxygen. I mean, and it got to the point where we were sitting there and we were watching, and literally everybody had fallen into this culture.
It was like a flagellant.
Well, that's where the whole flagellant societies came through. People didn't whip themselves because they thought they're going to be cured of the Black Plague. They were rock stars. When they came through town, they were atoning for the town's sins. So the towns, this is true. Ask any historian. When the flagellants came through town, most of the girls in the village, when the holy flagellants left town, most of the girls in town were pregnant. These guys were rock stars. Okay, my back hurts, but man, I'm living the life. I'm the Mick Jagger of the Dark Ages. All right, baby. It's really tempting because everything about show business, from Hollywood to the music industry, the publishing industry, the stage, is telling the audience you're not good enough. And it's one of the things that drove me away from pop music in the first place, because I realized in high school, I'm never going to fit in. By the time I get the right haircut and pay for the right clothes, they're already out of style. I'm being strung along. So instead, I dressed like a villain from a B-movie, and when I walked down the hallways, it parted like the Red Sea.
Now picture Patrick walking down a hallway. Start with his feet. Engineer boots with steel-toed,
but boots. Square steel-toed square, engineer boots.
Yeah, not like the guy from that Stephen King.
No.
With the... No. Pointy ones.
The square was actually better for hitting the knee.
Wearing a East German border guard greatcoat that was a couple of sizes too big.
Always blue jeans, always a black t-shirt.
Yep. And
cigarette behind my ear. Mm-hmm. And the teacher would take it and it'd be I used to ride the bus all over the city doing shuffling cards with one hand, rolling quarters across my knuckles. I was fascinated by magic. So when the teacher would swipe my cigarette off behind my ear, by the time they looked back up, there'd be another cigarette there. And since I was stealing them from the principal's office, I never ran out.
So every day was audience participation day.
In a way, because I wasn't playing a role wearing that outfit.
You were being yourself.
I was being myself, and the message was...
Stay the F away from me.
When it came time to go on stage, flannel shirt, straw hat. How you doing, folks? Because when you go on stage, you want to be yourself, but you want to round off enough hard edges.
You got to be comfortable.
You don't want to, like, you don't go into the Methodist men's thing and do a Norm Macdonald thing. I don't know, folks might not remember this, but a couple of years ago, like 10 years, 20 years ago, Norm Macdonald was given a comedy gig for a fundraiser, and he was told by the dean of this college to keep it clean. Well, you don't do that to Norm Macdonald. So the first thing he did was walk out and just start graphically describing things you don't want to talk on stage. And he's looking at the dean of the college as he's doing it.
That boy wasn't right in the head.
He still isn't, but that sort of aggressive, you can get away with it if you're Norm Macdonald or Andrew Dice Clay. But when you go on stage, you want to smooth it off enough.
Yeah, you're always going to upset somebody, but you don't want to do it intentionally.
Well, like upsetting people intentionally. For the last 30 years, we've had to tell banjo students, you know, there's songs you don't sing. There's songs you just don't. Just don't do it. Oh, it's part of tradition. Those lyrics mean something, or this song's about the Civil War.
No, they don't.
And
if you're gonna, just leave them out. That's stage presence.
If people still wanted to hear Jimmy Crack Corn, they would be singing it.
That's right.
There's a reason we let it go with Bugs Bunny. And taking the stance of being offensive just for historical purposes.
That's baloney.
It's bullshit. Yeah. Because you have to be able to be yourself, but at the same time, be adaptable enough.
Well, you have to have enough chops to have a large repertoire of things you can go to. You have to be able to relate to the people in the audience, make eye contact, take a look at them before you start. Is there anybody here who I, you know, you learn to pick them out.
And one of the masters was Pete Seeger. The guy was a genius at working crowds. And his banjo playing, it was never as bad as his critics made it out to be, or never as great as his fans made it out to be. It was perfect, middle of the road, no frills banjo playing.
Using your banjo as a tool
to get the song across.
The song or your idea across.
He wasn't trying to be Heifetz on the banjo. He was just being Pete. And he would get the audience singing. And it covered so many weak points in his own performance and got them moved into the moment.
They became part of the show.
One of the best blues tracks, and I go to it when I'm having a really bad pain day, one of Mississippi John Hurt's later recordings, Live in a College. And end of the show, he starts doing You Are My Sunshine, Mississippi John Hurt song, really bouncy. And then you hear the crowd, all these college kids. It's the late 60s, and all these college kids, You Are My Sunshine.
He owned them.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's little things like that. You can throw something outrageous in.
If you're performing, if you're on a stage and you bring out 18 banjos.
Oh, that was
all tuned to a different tuning. So in between these silly songs that all sound the same.
Oh God.
They all sound the same. You can show how smart you are by playing in all these different tunings, memorized
Now, the reason this is happening.
And that way, you're not going to draw your audience. You're not going to do anything except...
Well, they think they are because they're... I was talking to my acupuncturist last week, and she said something really interesting. She said about 11 years ago, the world woke up and realized that the instructions to follow certain tasks, go to school, go to college, get a job, and you'll be rich and famous at the end like a Hollywood movie. About 10, 11 years ago, we all woke up and realized that wasn't happening. And when you buy into this thing that every banjo needs to be in a different tuning, we got to change banjos for songs, the keys are different, you're not thinking like a musician. And a long time ago, Roger Sprung turned to me and said, you need to stop thinking like a banjo player.
And start thinking like a musician.
And it infuriated.
And he made that plural. It was a pair of us.
And it was said like he was spitting out a piece of greasy beef that he didn't want to chew.
I expected you to launch.
I punched the tree, remember? Once I was walked away out of sight.
But then you realized...
You let the, what I do, and it drives Dad nuts. Dad doesn't react. I let myself react. I let myself totally experience the emotion. Then I sit down and go, you know, I'm a real asshole. And I work it out. It used to drive Amy crazy. It's like Father Ted. You run around going, feck, feck, arse, feck, arse. Oh, everything's fine. So that's the Irish people in a nutshell. Let's show. But when you, that whole thing with the multiple banjos, the tunings, citing where you get the song from.
The history of the song, the history of this, the history of that.
What's really happening is no matter how skillful those songs on the repertoire list are performed, they're the only songs that person knows. And here's the thing.
And girls and boys, the audience knows that.
A lot of them don't because they're stupid. See, in the 50s and 60s, most of your audience was well-read.
Yeah.
In 2021, most of your audience, if we had like that meter from Forbidden Planet that would show what your brain power was, most of the people couldn't turn it on.
You're mostly dead.
Or it'd be like a picture of a butt. What's on this person's mind? Butts. Lots and lots. Why are you thinking about... I'm not thinking about butts. I'm thinking about the Senate. Well, you got butts in there. Well, we do in the Senate, too. I mean, this whole, all this stuff about this, that, and the other thing, it's trying to get around a very important point, and that is to perform with a musical instrument, you have to be a musician. How does a musician approach the song? Not the way the banjo teachers do. We don't go up to the song one note at a time. We don't memorize the song by melody because your brain can't remember that. The human brain is not good at multitasking in specifics. It's good when you get the general idea and allow things to flow around it. When we learn songs, the very first few songs you learn, like Cripple Creek, White House Blues, you learn it from tap. Because you get a graphical display of what's happening on the instrument.
It's a training tool.
But when you go on stage with it and you're singing and playing, you can't just play that melody over and over again. There has to be variations. There has to be backup to your voice. You have to be able to do something with the banjo.
Well, most of these people don't sing.
Because they can't play.
Yeah, exactly.
See, if you're paying a banjo teacher, I don't care who it is, bluegrass, old time, I don't care who it is, pick a song or an artist. How would you do this? Now, one of the jokes running from some of my friends is they want me to do a Billy Joel song, and I won't, because whenever I say, oh, God, I need a mop.
Just throw up in his mouth a little bit.
When I say Billy, when I say that guy, little guy from Jersey, I think he's like 4.5 feet tall. Billy Joel. And I can do Billy Joel. I'll actually, in the next couple of weeks, I'll break down and keep my word. And I'll
with me in the room, you won't.
And I'll do.
Better have a bucket handy.
And it won't be one of the slow, easy to do, like She's Got a Way About Her or The Longest Time, because they're very simple songs. But the more rock beat songs, how would you play that? How would you approach that on the banjo?
How would you figure out the chord progression?
And when I pick up my banjo to play a song, when I wake up, well, you know I'm gonna be the man who's waking up next to you. Now, there's a melody there. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. So as I'm singing that, even with the instrument in my hands, I'm feeling those chord progressions.
Mm-hmm.
When I wake up, well, you know I'm gonna be the man who wakes up next to you. And I would walk 10,000.
You can feel the progression.
Because, Magnificent Seven. Remember what they said to the gunfighter? Mister, we deal in lead. And when those guys pulled out their guns, what happened?
They dealt out in lead.
Ladies and gentlemen, musicians deal in music. We deal in the language of music, not the notes, not the chords, not the harmony, not the percussion, not the rhythm, but the language.
Which contains all of those things and more.
Well, just like English does. There's rhythm to the spoken language of English.
Yes.
And if I change that English, if I change the phrasing, it messes up the meaning or the intent of the phrase. For example, if I go, I really have to go to the bathroom, it means one thing. But if I go, I really have to go to the bathroom, it means another. And if I go,
whoops.
And if I go, you know, I really have to go to the bathroom.
Click.
It means something else. So when you're playing the song, it's only 8 of the 12 notes, and usually not even 8, more like 6 or 7, just being woven. And you have to learn how to manipulate that and work with it, just like a boxer learns to use his body in a fight, just like a quilter.
Well, go anywhere where there are buskers. Anywhere, I don't care. The bus station, or if you're out on the street.
Oh, good luck.
Or if you can find people busking. Now, there's going to be people there. There's going to be all levels of musicianship, from the dregs of society to people who should be in Carnegie Hall. There's going to be all
Anybody levels. Can go to Carnegie Hall. You just rent the place.
Rent the hall, yeah.
I could. Here you go, folks. You want to have some real fun? Start a GoFundMe and send Patrick to Carnegie Hall. We'll make the billboard, me with a banjo, mooning the audience.
Now, Leo, you made me lose my train of thought.
The Badass Tour, Carnegie Hall.
You made me lose my...
So any busker from the worst to a
now,
Carnegie
look
Hall...
look at them. Some of them are going to have a lot of money in their case. Some of them are only going to have the few quarters and a couple of bills they threw in to attract...
Seed money.
Yeah. Seed money, yeah.
Doesn't work.
But you look at the ones who are successful, shall we say, by whatever you want to measure success in a street busking situation. The ones who are successful aren't just sitting looking at the ground, plunking out notes. I saw a YouTube video of a group, really nice looking girl, a couple of guys with her. There she was playing a banjo, staring at the ground, playing meaningless noodling fiddle tunes. People walking by, you know, nodding. They're not going to pay her. They're going to go to the person who's singing, who's dancing, who's interacting with the crowd, who's talking to the people.
Letting kids try the banjo.
Yeah.
That's dangerous. Your instrument's going to get sneezed on. It's going to get chocolate on it. It's going to get boogers on it.
That's why you have wipes.
And guess what? When the kid does that, that's a good thing. Because while you're saying to the mom and the kid, it's no problem, you make eye contact with the dad and mentally send the image.
Look at the dad, look at the case.
You send the message, that snot's going to cost you 20. And it always works. It's okay. It's okay. Don't worry about it, little partner. No problem. It's only a priceless musical instrument. Don't worry about it. Dad's going to fix it, right, Dad?
But the ones who are successful have that skill set to interact, look at the audience, make a judgment, which one to go for, which one, if it's a boy and a girl, sing a love song. If it's a couple of kids, give them a couple of kids songs or whatever, but get them excited.
Any couple. It's
eye contact and do it with, but if you're only playing the few things you know, and you expect to be successful, people are going to walk right by.
What I would do on the street, and I started busking, I was 14, 15.
Yeah.
And I didn't have a license. I wasn't supposed to. And I got beat up a few times badly. Another day at school. But what I learned was I never went and busked for the money. I could always, anywhere I went, I could put the banjo case out and make enough for a pack of cigarettes or a ride home. So I always knew that. What I treated busking as was my dojo, because the street was my teacher, not just the musicians I met, but the audience.
The people, yeah.
And the thing about sawmill tuning, it's really exciting when you first discover it as a banjo player. And you're going to want to try everything in sawmill tuning. And it's going to make everybody run away from you. Because after two songs,
well, that, sounds the same.
That G major to F major transition, which is all sawmill really goes to, every one is the same song. It's just shuffle the notes around a little bit. People hear that sameness. So what you want to do is change the rhythms. While the choir sings Ave Maria. Do some Percy Sledge. I'll be singing. Then another couple goes by the Batman theme. Another couple goes by, I used to get a lot of traction with the old American Hero theme song.
I Want a Hero.
No, I used to do that one, and there was Look at Me Now, I'm Walking On. It's been so long since I played it. I never thought I could be so free. I mean, I would do that the schmaltziest, cheesiest, with a big, dumb grin on my face, because it's a terrible song, but it feels good. The Greatest American Hero, the guy with the suit that didn't know how to use it, so he could never fly right.
Is that the one who killed himself?
No, that was, I Want a Hero is the guy that shot himself with a blank gun.
Blank 44 Magnum.
Yeah.
Put it up to his head and pulled the trigger.
It was an accident. He thought he was playing a joke on one of his...
Yeah, he didn't realize that...
A paper wad and a...
And a charge of powder will blow your brains right out of your head. Oh, God. God. That was a good show, too. I enjoyed that.
I never watched it.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So you were mad at me at the time. So whenever, by the time evening television came on, I had to go hide because I was out in the subway playing the theme to The Greatest American Hero. But I was always, I would talk to people at subway stations and bus stations. I'd say, I'd ask them, what music do you like? And I'd learn about these artists. I didn't have a big brother tell me about rap music, and you and Mom didn't play music much at home, record-wise. I had to go discover rock, country, blues from other people saying, Elmore James, you got to listen to Elmore James. They listened to Elmore James. It was like a light came from the sky.
Is that the guy that gave you your blues name?
Yes. And if that's the thing, like, you don't make up your blues name. Don't make up your nickname.
It has to be bestowed.
It has to be bestowed. And even if it's something like Pillsbury, wear it proudly because you earned it. Same with clothes, choosing what to wear.
Don't wear a costume.
Well, even if you choose to. Like Eric Johnson wears that almost Sergeant Pepper-esque uniform jacket when he performs with his guitar. He can get away with it. He's one of the greatest guitar players of his generation. If he wants to dress like he's in Sergeant Pepper, I'm all for it. The playing matches up. But make sure if you're going to go out dressed like Liberace, you can play
like Liberace. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Because the first time I went out with my Resophonic guitar, look at me. I've got a Dobro 33H chrome-plated bell brass guitar with a resonator cone. It weighs like 20 pounds. It's awesome. And old Tiny was like, yeah, it's really cool, but have you earned it yet? And I was just like, you carry a guitar like that.
People are going to expect you.
And it got me, it was really cool because people would see me with that guitar and they would talk to me where they wouldn't before. And everybody tried to talk me out of buying that big silver guitar, but it fit my personality. So when you're choosing your clothes, If you're not from West Virginia and grew up in the Appalachian Mountains, don't dress up like a character from the Foxfire books. Don't wear bib overalls if that's not your everyday clothes.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, the
you can't live up to the image you're painting.
Right. And you also want to make the image accessible enough that it's not... I always go for a little bit of menace because where I grew up in Philly, you had to look tough. So the black t-shirt is my always go-to. I feel comfortable in that. But I'm also aware I look like I'm there to rob the place. So when I'm on stage looking like that, I soften my edges. How you doing, everybody? And it's not easy for me to do that, but you learn how over time. And it's not putting out a false presentation of myself, but having manners.
Look at yourselves on YouTube. Everybody has a YouTube video. Some of them are pretty good. Mm-hmm. Some are a little less than pretty good. But that isn't enough. Learn to draw your audience in. Now, you can do that with a camera, or you can do it with a person. You look at that red eye on the camera, and you...
Well, if you can't do it with one, you won't be able to do it with another.
Exactly.
It's really fascinating. I won't use a name.
Yeah, but you don't want to go,
More than once, my father and I did very expensive, very intense video instructional shoots with a couple of fairly well-known teachers. In one case, after weeks of planning, he sat down in front of the camera, and the fellow giving the lesson looks at us blankly. What do you want me to do? And another fellow we worked with, he had a whole lesson plan. And it was going to be great. We were really excited about it. This instrument's really interesting, and if you practice hard, you can be an instrument player too. And we had driven 4 hours just to get there, taken hours to set up the shoot. And we're behind the camera looking at each other. What happened? And as soon as you start learning to play, old Paul the Beatnik, who we found out later was a vo-tech teacher who just didn't want to, just too lazy to do it.
He was a blacksmith, a clock repairman, a jewel maker. He could do almost anything.
And Grandpa said the man is so lazy he could crap himself in bed and all he'd do is kick the turds out from under the blanket and go back to sleep. But Paul as soon as somebody got the basic frailing down, strum down, or a guitar chord down, he'd have them show the next new person that came to the group. And teaching became part of our craft. It is part of the craft. It isn't enough to just learn the information. You have to be able to pass it on. You have to process it to a point where you understand it.
And that all adds up to what is called in today's bright world as chops.
Or stage presence. Or if you're a real dingbat and want to make the performer feel like they didn't work for this, they were just blessed by the fairy godmother, just go, oh, I can't do that. I don't have your talent. Oh, thank you for demeaning 40 years of hard work. I hope you have mess your pants on the way home.
That's not very nice. But remember, we ramble. We're having fun. We're having a conversation. And you notice not one.
There's one or two. But we worked out the verbal placeholders a long time ago. It's natural to throw.
You can't do that on a radio. And you can't do it on a street corner.
And if you're on stage going, and this song is like, it's a really great old song, and it's about a pirate who meets a clown, and it really meant a lot to me because it sings about blood, and the blood scared me when I was a kid.
And this is a special tuning just for this song.
We actually heard an interview on radio like this. I actually used a couple of lines from it, and we were like, can this person get hit in the mouth or just have dental surgery? What? I'm not a great enunciator. I have a thick Philadelphia accent. I'm aware of that. So does Dad. But taking the time to be comfortable enough to let the language flow.
And you don't have to be perfect because it's a learning thing. You do it and then you analyze what you did and go back, change it up a little bit and do it again.
And I'll let you in on a little trick. This is fun. I don't know if I should share this. It's really simple. Verbal placeholders are also a sign of either fumbling? Bullshitting.
Uh-huh.
Or just making stuff up.
Uh-huh.
It's like, we went to the zoo and, we saw a tiger and, it was like,
And like the tiger was picking its teeth with rabbit bones and,
yeah. What happens as your brain is fishing for something interesting to tell the person or the audience, you just start filling the empty space with noise because it's called flop sweat.
Flop sweat, yeah.
Sweat starts running down. And folks, we're not perfect. We've been there. We've been in shows so bad that we try not to talk about them, like the night the fire eater set his hair on fire, which was perfect because the guy was doing a Michael Jackson joke. And he took the flaming cotton ball he was putting in his mouth and putting out the fire, put it behind his head. And we're playing the banjo for him. We're playing banjo tunes. And look, I'm Michael Jackson. He takes the wand away, and his hair's on fire. And I'm looking at Dad. Dad, I keep playing. Dad gets up, banjo in hand, walks up behind the young man, puts the fire out, just pats it out with his hand, and the guy turns around, and Dad just gives him this long, silent look and just shakes his head slowly and walks. The place went nuts. The guy at the end of the show said, thank you, but you stole my act. Well, you upstaged.
I didn't set myself on fire, you dumbass.
But the way Dad did it, he totally calm, still banjo in hand, and just pat, 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 and fires out, smoke going up. And the guy's realizing he almost got hurt bad. And the dad just really slow. You didn't have to say it. You heard the word disappointed.
Loser.
you just knew. And
we've had some times, man. We have had some times.
But we've been in shows where things went wrong. And those are actually blessings. Because number one, you get great stories to tell.
And you don't die.
You don't die. And if you're smart, you come away stronger. You learn what to look for, what the signs are for a bad gig. And no, I'm not going to tell you because you have to experience those things for yourself. One thing the internet's done wrong. Yes, it's put every bit of information out there available. You can learn about every song. You can learn any technique. But you still have to go out in the world.
And apply. You have to work it. You have to earn your space on the ladder, your chops, if you will. I keep using that term, but that's the best term to use.
Well, I think it works because, again, what people don't understand, what's happening on stage, it's not just going up there and playing Mary Had a Little Lamb or American Pie or whatever. You have the coordination of the left hand. You have the coordination of the right hand. You have the understanding, conceptual, working knowledge of the language of music. And when you're playing, you're not thinking about the chords. You're not thinking about what your hands are doing. You're playing entirely by feel. It's the same sensation as riding a bicycle.
Well, we met those people at that old-time music
Avoca, thing. Iowa.
No, Coatesville.
Oh, God. Not the, oh, ooh.
We teamed up with a bunch of people. We never met them before. And we picked some songs. We just played them because we were all musicians. We were communicating within our medium, and we were having a blast, and the people loved it.
And the old-time banjo experts that were doing Jagoff things, signs behind my friend's back, Paul came in, and they're all, oh, hi, Paul. And Paul turns around. And they're all flipping him off and making faces, and they climb up on stage, the experts, and each one was doing a rendition
of
Old Molly
Hair.
Old Molly Hair, what you doing there?
You should learn to play that at your second week in the banjo.
Actually, that was like the third song I learned.
Yeah.
I don't play it much because da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
And they were...
But each one... Well, when I play Old Molly Hair, I put the drop thumb here. Well, when I play Old Molly Hair, I put the drop thumb here, and I'm in a different tuning. And they're all playing these wonderful, rare old banjos set up to sound worse than a thrift shop harmonies. And they couldn't understand why pretentiously pretending to master a simple folk instrument, playing a song nobody wants to hear badly. And yeah, guys, I know, I'm trying not to be mean. A lot of people talk about being professional old-time banjo players. I don't know many that can actually play the banjo. They can play their song list.
So imagine their anger when the audience starts...
Got up and left, and they come around to our table, and they're asking for Bad, Bad Leroy Brown. We were doing stuff, crazy stuff. And the thing was, and this is an important thing for a folk musician to understand. Pete Seeger understood this. You have to sing the songs of the people. Even today, when you go out to an audience, only a small percentage is going to be familiar with the Beatles. The world has changed.
Yeah,
we're living in 2021.
It's been almost 60 years since they hit the shores.
You've got to be able to interact with young musicians. When they throw new musical ideas at you, work them in. You can fit in to heavy metal.
If you're a jam session, invite the kid in, because if you're speaking the same language, it'll work out.
If you only play one kind of music, whether it's classical, old time, or jazz, if you're putting up those boundaries, what you're doing, you make about as much sense as a person that goes to a really big, expensive Chinese buffet and only eats French fries.
Yeah.
And we know guys like that. I only come here for the French fries. Everybody else, you know, picking out. Okay, there's so much to sample. And you don't have to be a pig and eat all of it. But you want to be able to walk through and at least know what's on the menu. Not, I don't know what that gray glop is.
So you want to make the people who are listening, watching, hoping that you do well for them. You want to make them reach out to you. You want to draw them into your circle, not push them out of it.
And you want them to walk up to you at the end of a show and go, my grandmother sang me that song.
That's right. Here's some money. Thank you very much. Because you're going to stand on a street corner and play your guts out for fun. You want to make a few bucks.
And
right?
If you want to make money busking, don't. Because if you're busking... And this, it drives me nuts when people treat busking like a gig.
It's not.
It's if you're busking, if you're doing it for real, you're doing it in the rain, you're doing it when it's cold, you're doing it when you don't want to do it.
And there's nothing wrong with putting out the case.
I have no
bucket.
But when you put the case out. Every time you play, whether you're on stage, whether you're giving a lesson, whether you're busking, even if you're being paid for the work, you're still performing an act of service.
Yep.
You're giving of yourself. And when people connect with the music, they're going to walk up and they're going to have stories about songs their grandfather sang. If you're smart, start building up an auditory understanding of everything.
Here's a little story. At your mama and I's wedding, this is in 1968, and the band we had at the reception was five guys from the string band.
From the Mummers.
The Mummers. And these were entertainers. They were just guys. They got together. And your mother asked them to sing a song to dance with her father. And I think the song was, "Won't You Come Over to My House."
Won't you?
And I'm saying, they won't know that. Well, damn if they didn't.
Yep.
And they just, okay, guys, let's... It was, oh my God, these guys know everything. No, they just know a lot.
It's not just that. People, and this is a different workshop, but we can touch on it to close. What I was talking about earlier, that when I pick up my banjo, there's nothing set in my mind. When you read about Tiny Tim, they marveled at how many songs he knew. He had incredible knowledge of very early vaudeville music, kind of like I do. Now, how do we do that? How does a person keep a category of music like that? To a non-musician, they probably imagine that I know every note, I know every chord, I know the lyrics.
Yeah, it's like poetry.
So when I start singing, "Won't you come over to my house?"
Even though it was in 3/4 time.
"Won't you come over to play?" There's a flow to it. And once you start getting that, you start putting the banjo to it. "Won't you come over to my house?"
Now, we didn't discuss this before.
"Won't you come over to play?"
Now, if your banjo wasn't out of tune, you'd pick it up and just put in a...
Actually, I intentionally didn't set up the banjo for this. I don't want to show off. Yeah. You got the Festivus arguments. So even without the banjo in my hand, I could sing the melody.
That's right.
I could walk up to the microphone and sing it with a band. That isn't magic. I'm not memorizing the notes. It's the poetry of the language.
Exactly.
Excuse me. Song lyrics flow like poetry.
You're not reading individual words. You're reading phrases.
Right. And it's the rhythm and flow of the phrase as it comes in. "As I was a-walking the streets of Laredo, as I was a-walking Laredo one day." It's the same song. "Won't you come over to my house? Won't you come over to play?"
Nothing much changes. There's nothing much new.
And it's very subtle things. It's like when you see cooking shows and the chef says a pinch of salt and just reaches in the salt dish and throws a thing in there. It looks really impressive, but we don't know if that food's any good. You see chefs on television. They're throwing spice. "I'm throwing tiny five spice, rancid mayonnaise, and a dead skunk in my souffle. Oh, that's going to taste marvelous. See, the skunk aroma brings out the acidity, but it could use a little more bite."
Put some Old Bay in it, yes.
And when you're in a real kitchen, see, I grew up in a real kitchen. It's not this pretentious, just grabbing stuff. It's a fluid motion. I would watch Dad work the grill, and it was amazing. He'd have so many orders lined up on top of that grill. He'd keep them straight. He'd be cooking breakfast, cheesesteaks, sausage, spatulas going crazy. And as he's doing it, he's keeping the peanut gallery
entertained.
Because we had a squad of very well-to-do customers that would just sit on their ass eating five egg omelets, solving the world's problems.
Oh, that was fun. But I couldn't do it today. It was too much work.
When you did it, it was totally in the flow. Yeah. It didn't look like you were trying. There was no effort to it. It's like watching a kid ride a bicycle.
I knew the craft.
And that's it.
And my customers were my audience. They expected to have it go smooth and for me to answer their questions, joke, laugh, look at the traffic going by outside.
So now everybody's looking at their computers right now and they're going, so where do I, what do I do in this COVID time to learn stage presence? I mean, there could be another shutdown.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
So here's the thing. Even if you can't go out, even if the virus has you stuck at home, or if you're vaccinated and get around your town, you can still go out in the park and play the banjo. You could even sit on your, in your front steps and wave the cars passing by. Folks,
don't be embarrassed by your instrument.
Not only that.
Or your skill level.
Not only that. Everybody wants to do what I do. I get it all the time. I wish I could do that. I wish I had done those things. And I ask them why they didn't. And it's always what people might think. Well, when I was 12 years old, I was taking karate lessons in a garage dojo run by a sadist. It was behind a podiatrist's house in an old Victorian mansion on Westchester Pike, right by the Manoa Shopping Center. And they would open the garage doors when it was hot, because there was no air conditioning in the place, and it'd be sweltering. And the kids from my school would sit on their bikes and watch the karate lesson through the garage doors and just make fun of me constantly. Do you, Pat? Yeah, you loser. Yeah. And I wanted to quit. I'm embarrassed. And Dean got right in my face. Why are you walking away? They're making fun of me. And he looked me right in the eye. And they didn't curse in dojos in the 80s. It was very serious by karate. You take your shoes off, don't swear. He looked me right in the eye. Fuck them. Number one, what? And he said something really, it changed things for me. Where are you? You're here, training. Where are they? Sitting on the bikes their mommies bought them. Too scared to be in here. So they're going to try and get you to quit. You strong enough to do what you want to do? Or are you going to quit to fit in with a bunch of sissies?
Hello.
And I know that word isn't used today, but it's what he said. And I stood there and went back into a horse stance and throwing my punches and blocks and let him laugh. And then Dean told me a couple of things I could do at school to encourage.
The detente.
Well, just a sort of a demonstration of the wonderful things karate can teach you to do with your body. But I constantly have to tell this story because I'm always hearing from folks that should be old enough to be themselves, that, oh, I couldn't do that. What would people think? You know, I couldn't get in front of people like that. Oh, I couldn't get in front of people like that.
You have to hit that FU button. Ding.
And you have to ask yourself the question, if you really had any concern for what another human being thinks of you, would you have bought a banjo? I don't mean that to knock down the banjo. The banjo, even today, what's it symbolize?
Deliverance.
Not oh, Deliverance. He's working at the banjo player from Deliverance works as a greeter at Walmart now.
Oh, really?
Isn't Hollywood wonderful? Oh, God. So, I lost my train of thought with that. You threw Deliverance out my brain. But people...
I still got it.
If you cared about what people thought, with the Deliverance thing, with the Beverly Hillbillies thing, with the Flat and Scruggs doing Bob Dylan stuff from the 60s, have you heard that album, folks? When Flat and Scruggs do Donovan, when the chilly hours and minutes of uncertainty I long to be, and the warm touch of your love.
You can stop now. You can stop now.
I was singing to Ned. Ah, but I might as well try and catch.
I think we've reached the end of this road.
Be yourself, folks.
Let's sum up. Sum up.
Know your craft.
Know your craft.
The banjo is a musical instrument. It's a folk instrument, but it's a musical instrument.
And it follows the same rules as every other instrument.
And there are no different kinds of music. Bach, the Sex Pistols, the Beastie Boys, Lawrence Welk, Liberace, Mick Jagger, It's all the same notes.
Different deliveries?
No, different advertising. That's all. You could put those guys in a jam session, and it would be weird, but it would work.
Sure, because they're communicating.
And they're musicians.
In the language of music.
The whole thing with genres is just to make sure the peas don't touch the carrots, so the country guys don't feel inadequate around the blues guys, and the blues guys don't get nervous around the skinheads. Everybody wears a costume, they go in the right group. If you're yourself, if you're the outlier, you can be the connection between the groups.
Yep.
And if you really like me, if you're really like me, then you can use that connection to maybe have some fun. Hey, bartender, you see that guy over there? Yeah, don't give him any beer. I did that to a famous banjo player.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Don't give the name.
No, it was at Annie's Cafe.
Yeah, don't give him any beer.
With Clan Seol.
Yep, Annie's anniversary. I think she'd had the place 2 or 3 years. And they got drunk. The owner and the bartender got drunk, and they threw the doors open. Free beer for everybody. And there was a concert at another hall up the street, and somebody yelled, "They're giving away beer!" They got up in the audience and they left. And I had met the performer on the street. I'd actually gone into town early, hoping to spot them, and they wouldn't talk to me.
It was a banjo player.
Yep. So, on stage playing the band, you know, bloody, bloody British, bloody, bloody British. British did this to my grandma, British did this to my grandpa. So we're doing our thing, very, very, very IRA.
This is the band, this is the bar with the picture of the Queen and Maggie Thatcher upside down.
I look out in the crowd and there's the band. And I did go over and try to introduce myself again. I wasn't a total jerk. Snubbed me again. I walk over to Pat the bartender. You see those guys? Yeah, don't give them any beer. No problem.
Anyway.
But see, when you give somebody the cold shoulder, you don't realize...
You're going to get it back.
Exactly.
In spades.
Exactly. And sometimes you're going to get it even if you don't deserve it.
Yeah. So be yourself. Make a connection with the audience. Be sure your butt can cover the bet your mouth makes.
Well, I will say this. You want to make sure your ass can cover the checks your mouth is writing. But at the same time, don't be afraid to write a bad check just to see what will happen.
Oh, yeah.
I don't mean write an actual bad check.
As long as you're in control.
We got on stage for the first time because I went backstage and told the guys backstage that we were professional banjo players.
Oh, God.
We knew 2.5 songs, like 3.5 songs.
I didn't throw you out of the car and drive home alone. If I didn't do that then...
But notice I waited till you're coming right out of the lavatory.
Yeah,
to tell
lavatory. You have no idea, people, oh, my God. Oh,
but all of it...
I wouldn't change a thing.
And all of it has been about... Not fitting into a peer group, not trying to be something we're not.
Being ourselves,
being ourselves and discovering what the language can do.
And every time you do it, you get a little more comfortable, a little better. You expand a little bit. Your circle gets bigger. Instead of pushing people out, you're drawing people in. And that's the secret. Nobody wants to hear the history of the goddamn banjo. Nobody wants to know how many tunes you know. Nobody cares where in Appalachia you learn this stupid song. They want to be entertained.
Well, I mean, glorifying the poverty of the Appalachian Mountains.
Oh my God.
I didn't understand that in the 70s. No. We've been there. We drove through Centralia once.
Yeah.
We seen the smoke boil up from Centralia. It's scary. It's not. Oh, let's go to the mountains.
Let's get the hell out of here.
You notice that there's eastern and western Pennsylvania, but there's Alabama in the middle. there's nothing there but trees and crazy people.
Yes, I like central Pennsylvania.
Yeah, we used to hang out there. When I went with you, it was sort of like abandon hope all ye.
On that happy note.
And if you're ever by Fin, Fur, and Feather.
Oh, it's gone.
It's gone?
Last time your Uncle Tom and I were there, it was a while ago. This was a giant trading post. They sold ski-doos. They sold snow machines.
I loved it.
They sold guns. They sold hunting equipment. It was huge. Last time we were there, the warehouse was empty. The storefront was a greasy spoon selling a few dusty old, what do you call them, tchotchkes. Yeah. Everything was gone. So that was a passing of something really wonderful. We used to have a ball in that place. On Cowdersport Pike, Route 44, outside of Jersey Shore, Pennsylvania.
Why do they call it Jersey Shore if it's in the middle of the
I don't know.
It really confused me.
Tom's parents used to have a place called Raven's Rest on one of the offshoots from Route 80, and people would pull in, want to know where the ocean was. And you're 5 hours from the ocean. Keep driving. You'll find it eventually when your feet get wet. Anyway.
On the bright side, with global warming, Jersey Shore eventually will someday be Jersey Shore.
Oh, my God.
Top of those Pennsylvania mountains are about where the waves are pressed.
Hamina. Okay.
So we're going to say goodbye now.
Bring the audience into your world, and you go into their world. You make a connection. And without fear, without trying to be phony, be yourself. Share what you know. If you know five songs, do them well. Then go home and learn five more.
Once you get past the point of learning a couple of songs, start exploring how the language works. Don't just look at it in terms of banjo. Look at piano. Look at guitar, harmonica.
We used to always carry cheap harmonicas to give to kids.
Yeah, I don't do it anymore because the last time I did it, I gave a kid a harmonica, and the parent actually flipped out at me. Oh, I guess I'm going to have to listen to that shit at home.
I'm sure that kid turned out fine.
Oh, she might have had a change of heart with what I said to her.
Oh. You don't say something like that to Patrick.
I made her cry.
Oh, good. She deserved it. Anyway.
See, when you're dealing with, there's things where you keep the nice guy going, and then there's somebody says something so rotten, you just look up and use that bank of one-liners you've been picking up all those years of getting insulted for your playing. Or
Oh, there's a million of them.
Diet isn't working, huh? That wasn't the one I went with. It's like that scene in Terminator where he's thinking of what insult to give the landlord, and F you comes up and it lights up. And yeah, so like you say that to me, and it's like, little picture of Todd Rickles. A little hand comes up and points, say this one.
Oh, my God. It's been a roller coaster. I loved every minute of it. Okay. We're done.
Okay. But notice, folks, we had a conversation. We kept things more or less on point. And it isn't about a specific lesson. It's about the idea.
It's a thing.
And it's what you have to get the gist of it.
Yeah.
Just like with a song. You don't know every note. You're never sure of your next step. But remember what Daniel Boone said.
Can I say it?
You can say it.
If you don't care where you are, you ain't lost.
Goodbye, folks.
And do something nice for somebody today, please.
And get out there with your instruments.
Yeah, get out and draw people in. Don't live inside that 30-inch circle. Reach out of it.
And remember, this is important. When you're doing that, when you're getting out there and you're playing, if somebody says something nasty, start collecting one-liners.
Yeah.
Start researching the great comedians. Like, start with Groucho. His one-liners were some of the outside of a dog, a book is man's best friend. Inside of a dog,
it's too dark to read. Time flies like an arrow.
Fruit flies like a banana.
Don Rickles.
Don Rickles was would just insult people.
And they pay.
But he did it in such a way that it worked. And that, you've got to...
He was being himself.
You've got to be you.
Yep.
I've got to be me. I've got to be me.
All right, Newton, hit the button.
You're a swell guy that inspires joy feelings in the people around you.
Hit the button, damn
it. Expressing sincerity this way...
Hit the button.
...lets people know that you care. And if you really want to make people concerned, you can do the PBS thing. PBS is brought to you by Ray Salty Balls. We brought him here for the Christmas special.
Hit the button.
Use your voice.
If I knew which button to hit, I would hit it.
See, that's the thing. I'm deaf, and I do all the engineering.
Signing off.
See, that's delegation of
work. Goodbye.
Goodbye.